And I suddenly realised there was a guy standing next to me. He was in an NRMA uniform, I remember. And he stood there beside me. He looked into the store and he said, "Another bloody hi-fi shop." He said, "Ortel Systems is going to eat you alive." And he turned around and walked away.
Welcome back to Not an Audiophile, the podcast. This is episode 26, season 2, and today we speak to, really, an industry legend, Len Wallace of Len Wallace Audio, the man who started the business back in the very late 70s and continues to be found in the store regularly even today. But his son Tim, who also joins us, I guess is slowly taking over the reins. Have a listen. This episode of Not an Audiophile, the podcast, is sponsored by StereoNet. Looking for your tribe? Visit StereoNet.com today. Join one of the world's largest online communities for hi-fi, home cinema, headphones, and much more. Read the latest news and product reviews, or check out the classifieds for the largest range of gear on sale. Membership is absolutely free, so visit StereoNet.com and join up today. So thank you, gentlemen, today for appearing on Not an Audiophile, the podcast. We have Len Wallace and Tim Wallace, hello. Perhaps related, and my sidekick Brad Surhan is here for good reason, because Brad has a long relationship with at least one of these gentlemen, more than the other.
Yeah.
For those who are not familiar, Len is the father of Tim. And Len started the store that we're sitting in 1978, I believe, according to your website.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that in 1978, when you rented the store and started pouring stock into it and money, that you may not have thought you would be here 25 years later than the turn of the millennia, which at that point, at least my memory, would be that it would have seemed like a long way away, even to the year 2000, which of course was always the gag, wasn't it? Oh, what will we have in the year 2000? Well, you saw that, and then 25 years later, not trying to make you sound old, because you don't look old, but he looks very fit, doesn't he?
Yes.
It's that regime that he goes through on a daily basis, but or a nightly basis. But I mean, tell me all about it. I mean, really, is it a dream or a nightmare?
Look, I've enjoyed it. I'm still doing it, so I must be enjoying it. I still believe that there's probably not a better industry in the world to work in. There's very few downsides. Very good.
Yeah. Full of nice people.
Full of nice people.
Mostly.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of exceptions.
I mean, you're dealing in music, you're dealing in entertainment.
Absolutely.
You're trying to get that across to people.
Mm.
You know, we could be dealing in selling socks or something like that, you know, I mean, which is really boring. But this is a lot of fun, you know.
It's ever changing.
It's ever changing, yeah, absolutely.
Because,
that's true. Yeah.
And I suppose the second part of that question is directed to Tim, as someone who clearly grew up not just in a house, I assume a house full of hi-fi, not full, but obviously a substantial hi-fi system somewhere, surely, which I might ask you about in a minute. But did you see yourself, Tim, being here today as well? Because my understanding is you've actually been... In my estimation was you'd been here for 10 or more years, but I think much longer.
Much longer than that.
Yes.
No, I mean, no, I didn't have any real plans to land here. I was lucky enough to be obviously born into the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
School, you know, out of school, I just sort of started. I started in the storeroom and worked my way through the box, you know, shit kick and roll, as we call it back then. And then through the installation side and into sales. So it was good. I mean, I had no formal training in the industry or any studies based on what would be relevant here, but by going through all of the facets of it, I kind of got a very broad overview of it. And
yeah,
you know, one day led to another, 1 month, 1 year, and one decade led to another.
I think here I am. I think that's maybe how it works for most of us. Yes.
Yeah, but like Len says, I mean, it's a joy. It's as far as we're, you know, what we do is is amazing. So I couldn't be happier. I couldn't think of myself being in any other place at this time.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you've got toys, electronics, gadgets, and music. So it's exactly. and nice people. I mean, I think I'm reminded sometimes when I go to the supermarket or something where I bathe in the great unwashed briefly. our customers are fantastic people. Not all humans are as nice as people who buy great music playback systems and enjoy music. I mean, bizarrely, and you must have met these people then, there are people who don't have a stereo at home and don't enjoy music.
Which, to be honest, I still find quite...
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Strange. I know there are people... I mean, I've got a great affinity for music. I mean, I'm in this industry for the music, not the hi-fi. That's what started me in it. And I have a great connection to music, and I find it... interesting that there are people who don't. I mean, I can go to a concert and stand there and be just totally immersed, absolutely immersed in what's going on. And I remember once many years ago going to a Wagner opera, which I thought was just fantastic, and I was sitting there, tears running down my cheek, and I'm thinking, this is just fantastic. And of course it came to an end, and I was sitting there thinking, thank God everybody's walking in the same direction, right? nobody's looking back at me until I got to the door, exit door, and one of our clients standing there, who was the usher, and he looked at me and he said, "Hello, Len." And I went, "Oh."
It's funny. That was obviously not funny at the time.
Yeah, no.
But that happens. But also, the other thing that because I was at a gig last night, and what I find disturbing with how... So this event came to an end, quite suddenly almost, and then the lights come up and everyone just files out as if they were just filling up with petrol.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is that you're in this moment...
immersed.
And you are immediately, like someone's on the lighting controller, and the lights come up and you've just got to immediately snap out of this amazing experience and then just file out like cattle. I just reminded of it last night while it was happening. I'm like, oh, this is so weird. I'd like to just sit here and I mean, in the same way as you watch a movie, I'm quite happy to, or if I'm in the cinema watching a movie, just to sit there and watch the credits.
This is the credit and the music.
Yes, and you kind of, I guess you come out of that zone, but bizarrely in a theatre or a concert hall or what have you, you kind of have to snap out of it a bit, which everyone who's there must find that odd.
I think you talk about movies, I always think a good indication of how good the movie is how many people do sit there and watch the credits. I think if it's a fantastic movie, everybody just sits there, again, they're sort of coming down off the experience and everything else.
It's almost like you're waking up from a dream, coming out of it.
But as I say, I mean, that's the beauty of this industry. That's the sort of stuff we're dealing in all day. And we're sort of, I'm a great realist in the fact that we are never, ever, ever going to recreate the event in a lounge room.
Yeah.
Right? But at least we're doing an approximation of that. And we're showing people that this is what you can have.
Sonic illusions. Basically trying to trick ourselves into...
We're getting as close as we can.
Yeah.
And so it's always a wake-up call.
You can still engage that immersion. You can still create a feeling, evoke an emotion of total detachment of the world when you're listening to a good hi-fi system. For example, when if I'm having a bad day or something, I can jump into one of the rooms here and put on some music. Yeah. And it can put me in a different state where, and I find that's, even when I'm listening to a good system, when people often ask you in what do you listen for in a system and what is an indication to you that this is a good sound or whatever, one thing that I've always found is that my mind wanders, if I'm listening to some music and I start thinking about, was that beat right, was that cymbal accurate, was that, my mind is stressing and I get a sense that that's not a balanced sound for me, but when I sit there thinking, what am I going to have for dinner? Am I going to have tacos or whatever? And then my mind is allowed to just...
freed you up.
Just go and do it. So I think it's comfortable enough in the moment of the music or with the music to just let that be in its compartmentalized sort of state. And my brain's free to do its own thing. Then that, to me, is it shows. And then when the music's over again, back to work. But that it's what you're saying about that coming out of that zone. You can, even though you're not going to get the whole package like you get at an event, you can still at least recreate some kind of sanctuary for your mind to just zone out. And
absolutely, and I mean that's where clearly a better system can take you further away from reality, I guess, or closer to.
Or even just.
We've all heard those systems where you really are.
They jolt you.
You're taken with the sound, but of course it makes the musical performance so much more enthralling, and you know, that's what people pay the big bucks for, I guess.
But also the
thing. Other than the extra flashing lights and stuff.
Yeah, but the other thing is that the art or skill set is to. You don't have to have big bucks, and so if you've got. People who can you can actually what the tip you say is that what
Lemon's
Audio
scale.
Brings and good quality hi-fi shops bring to the equation is that okay, if you're wanting to spend 10 grand 5 grand 20 grand it's still possible to have a system that can actually still do a fair approximation and get your foot tapping and that's where the skill sets come in. That's why
for those listeners who are not don't have firm ideas on, you know, their favourite brands or whatever. I mean, that's where a specialist hi-fi store clearly is a great aid, and much better than shopping on the internet, where you can look, feel, and listen to the gear, and you've got a skilled and experienced salesperson. You clearly don't have any here, but
Scott,
you know. But I mean, you know, you
consultants,
who do and no doubt have experimented, you know, in the after work with different combinations, or perhaps have even. I mean, in my case, when I was selling equipment. You know, a customer might have a preference. They've done some research, and they drag you down their rabbit hole of choices, and you do. Sometimes you're surprised how well that works. I mean, the point is, the people working in shops like yours, you're both store. I don't know whose store it is these days. it's a team thing. But the point is, you do this day in day out for years. Len's done this now for over 12 years, I believe. You know, you know a huge amount. There's an enormous oral knowledge, isn't there?
It's almost second nature that you do know what is going to work, and if you can, you know, ask the right questions of a client, and you say, look, you know, tell me about your listening habits and what you listen to and the size of your room and all of that sort of stuff. Where's the setup? You could very, very quickly put a package together that's going to do that. And you only do that because, as I say, we've both been doing it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
See, over those times, you come to work, know what's going to work, what's not going to work, and, you know, for different clients.
Absolutely.
Some basic philosophies that still ring true and have been true for decades, that as long as you follow those and in terms of, you know, the basic fundamentals of a good hi-fi system, you know, a speaker is a speaker, an amplifier is an amplifier, a source is a source, and you put them together, you position them properly, you know, it doesn't, like, harping back to what you said, it doesn't have to be big money that you throw at it. It's just a case of balancing and designing and implementing the basic concept of what a hi-fi system is.
Balancing, dare I say, the flavours in a sense, so that you get a result that turns the customer on. So.
Flavours are another, you know, a whole other thing when you think about. There is no right or wrong sound, theoretically, in the tonality of sound. And one thing that we find is very interesting with customers is you can put something together that one person really likes and another person may not like at all, you know, and it's...
Yeah.
Or two different speakers at an equivalent price point, you know, can sound completely different to each other. You can't say one's better or one's worse.
It's where your skills lie is that you can be led... Mm. I mean, you throw a sample in front of them, have a listen to this, and they go, oh, no, that's far too whatever... I want something more like this, and then through your experience, you can, of course, you know, change an amplifier or speakers and head
shopping
off
online
direction.
doesn't give you that element. When you sit, and you can read as much as you like about a speaker or people's reviews or opinions, or you know, the minute you sit in front of it, you'll tell more in 5 minutes. You know, by
listening
to it. So that's really the key. You've got to get out there, let your ears find the sound that you want.
It's an odd thing, isn't it, that someone. I mean, obviously, researching online is the modern day equivalent of reading, you know, Hi-Fi Answers or something, but you know, one of those American magazines. But it's no substitute for, you know, going, well, this is an award-winning amplifier according to 3 out of 5 magazines or websites now, or YouTube influencer channels. I'll go and have a listen, and then that's when the magic really starts. So, Glenn, when you kicked the store off, how did you? I mean, clearly you had an interest in hi-fi, and you might have had some personal preferences about brands or something. But how did you? How did that work? Was it sort of like, I like the sound of this, so this is what I'm going to sell? Or is it sort of, and is that how the store works now? Or
it is. When I was working for somebody else at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It came time that I thought, well, we really should be doing this for ourselves,
yep,
rather than for somebody else.
Yes.
But I knew the brands that I wanted. And I remember before we opened, one of the big brands in those days was Acoustic Research,
yeah,
for speakers. It was an exclusive for Douglas Hi-Fi in George Street,
yeah,
and they were the only people that had it.
Right.
And I remember setting up a meeting with Acoustic Research and the guys from Douglas Hi-Fi,
yeah,
and saying, look, this is a product I like, this is a product I want to carry. And we sat down and negotiated a deal. And so we opened, that was one of the brands we opened with, and it was extremely successful for us because I liked it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd had a lot of time with brands like Yamaha, which at the time I knew well.
And, yep,
you know, a lot of brands that have gone by the wayside now, Aiwa and Sansui and people like that.
Oh, yeah.
But they're all brands that I liked and respected, and we're really lucky enough to be able to gather all of those in within the store. So it was, and I think it helped because at that stage it was a really small store. It was really stuck in Lane Cove, sort of out of the way a little bit, and we weren't going to be a...
Oh, this was an outer suburb.
This is an outer suburb. We weren't going to bother anybody, so I think everybody sort of came to the party.
Well, to some degree, but the hi-fi stores did tend to hang around the CBD, didn't they, in the late 70s?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as I think we were discussing briefly prior when we were doing sound checks, that... there was a bunch of stores in town. I know Brad's mentioned in the previous podcast where we were, you know, going over the history of Sydney Hi-Fi, or the industry in Sydney. You in theory wouldn't have been troubling what Douglas were up to in a way, because they would have seen you as this little guy, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Out of town, almost. Yeah.
And that worked in our favour.
Yeah.
So it would have been around 10 stores in the city then, back in the 78, 79,
80s. At least. At least.
That's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a whole bunch. You know, as I say, Kent Street, York Street, there's quite a lot of them. There's a couple in George Street. There's Pitt Street, you know, down near Central. You still had a store. There was quite a lot of stores in the city. Even here, in you know, where we, as I say, we're in Lane Cove, there was Milwison's and Chatswood. Hotel systems are up on the highway here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was one in Crow's Nest. You know, there was a...
Yeah,
I mean, in reality, there were just a lot of hi-fi stores.
There was just a lot of hi-fi stores. I remember, and I've told this story a number of times, but...
Go on, do it again.
I remember the day I opened. When I opened the store, it was a little store, and we'd really sort of run out of money. We had enough money to put audio all down one wall, and the other wall I'd put plants because they were cheap. And I remember the first day I opened the store, and I opened the doors, and I stood in the doorway looking back along into the shop, and I suddenly realised there's a guy standing next to me. He was in an RMA uniform, I remember, and he stood there beside me. He looked into the store and he said, "Another bloody hi-fi shop." He said, "Ortel Systems is going to eat you alive." And he turned around and walked away.
Is that right?
I thought, this is a great start. You know,
you've always got to have a few
bastards like that. Those
people are important. The generosity of spirit of that bloke.
The generosity of spirit.
What I found over the years.
Your generosity of spirit towards the generous spirit.
Is that, in fact, they're the perfect... They're the perfect foil for you, because you fire fucking up and say, did you react that way then? Or just you go, pucker your lips and go, oh shit.
Were you taken aback a bit, because it was day one.
It was day one.
You were hoping for a more positive.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't a great start, but anyway, it was all came to pass.
We're not going to harp on in the past too much, because it's a long time ago. It's not really that long ago, but maybe it is. But the... did you make a sale day one? Was it the... You did. Wow,
did.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's a great start,
We've Always.
I mean, it was your mother, but I mean, you know.
No, we did. Yep.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you remember any NRMA signage up on the wall after that?
I don't know why that sticks in my mind. I just remember the guy with the uniform he was in.
So, you know, you as I say, we're not gonna hang around in the '70s for too long, but zipping through the '80s, you clearly grew the store dramatically larger and what do you put that down to? I mean, was it the exceptional customer service, or was it the I'm implying you had good customer service. I don't know. Maybe the service was terrible, but I bet it wasn't, though.
Yeah, no, look, I think we just grew. The industry was growing as well in those days. It was still growing before it really peaked.
Yeah.
And it grew for us, and as we added more brands, and I had enough money to put stock on the other side.
On the other side, instead of the palms.
Instead of the palms. And, you know, and our staff grew and so forth. We just physically ran out of room where we were, space. Yeah. So we actually moved across the road.
Yes.
As simple as that, into a much bigger premises.
Which makes for a simple move.
Yeah, it was. Mm. It was.
Is that the premises tucked away in the arcade?
In the arcade, yeah, right, down the back of the arcade there. So we went from, you know, having a single demo room to having, you know, five demo rooms, which was a big plus.
It's a pretty big deal in its day, five demo rooms.
It made a big difference for us. So,
Some point, my memory, and I don't know when this was because it's vague for me, but at some point you won best hi-fi shop in the world or something?
I mean,
you must have paid good money for that.
There's a magazine in England who listed what they said were the five best stores in the world.
Okay.
And there's Graham's in London and Babler in Canada and Lyric in New York and so forth. And they picked us in Australia.
Wow.
So that was a big bonus. Yeah.
We'll take a quick break, 2 seconds. I mean, got to play an ad, so we can pay for this because your appearance fees are almost excessive. Well, back in a sec, folks. I was just talking to Jeff at Hey Now Hi-Fi about his latest installation, another dome and turntable, this time one with a Supertrack Blackbird arm and a Mutec Hayabusa cartridge. Motorcyclists everywhere are wondering how that could be. Blackbird arm, Hayabusa cartridge. Anyhow, then he said he was going back to the store to listen to some records on the Helix 2 in-store unit. I thought, do you ever get sick of listening to records? But then maybe not, playing them back through the Fisher & Fisher speakers that are crafted from slate. Anyhow, enough discussion of Jeff's antics. Back to the show. And we're back. We're back at Len Wallace Audio with Len himself and his... his foil, Tim, his son. I'll edit that in such a way that I close up that pause and it's not so obvious that I don't know what I'm doing. So I mentioned earlier, you know, brands. I have a sneaking suspicion that you have had relationships with some brands for a very long time. And I don't know what those brands are, but I feel like in your wholesale division, which we don't have to talk about, we can edit that bit out, but we won't. Because, I mean, it feels like it's an integral part of everything that you do. I feel like you've been importing Stax headphones for a long time.
A long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the import side is a little bit the same as the retail side. I mean, I have personally been a huge fan of Stax forever. It's such a great product. And so when the opportunity came up to distribute it, it was great. And the same, exactly the same thing happened with Musical Fidelity.
Which is the other brand I was going to.
Yeah.
I mean, goes back a long way.
That goes back a long, long way. Yeah, in fact, when we were in the old store, we were a Musical Fidelity dealer, and the agent at the time went bust.
Oh, okay.
And I remember... contacting Anthony Michelson and saying, look, you don't have an agent. Can I buy direct from you until such time as you appoint an agent? Because I don't want to not have the brand.
I'm just going to,
It actually was the truth. I just didn't want to not have it in the store. And he said, yeah, I'm happy to do that. And it just grew from there. We eventually sold quite a bit of it. And the suggestion was, you can be the agent. So we have been ever since.
And was that kind of the start of the wholesale division, if we can call it the division?
It was. The original product was actually Krell, which the same thing happened. Krell distributor went broke and we took it on our own at that stage and then it gradually grew. So they're all brands that, you know, we've actually had a personal love for, which makes it so much easier.
It's easier to sell things you love.
Yeah, if you like them, you know, and stuff. So that's been pretty good, in that respect. So.
And Stax was, are we talking, I don't know, mid-80s or something? Or
Stax would have been probably very early 90s.
Yeah, okay.
Music Fidelity came before that. That
would have been mid-80s. I perhaps meant that the start of the wholesale division was mid-80s or late 80s or something.
Yeah, mid-80s.
So it's a long time. Yeah.
Incredible.
It is. It's very impressive, and it's even more impressive when you consider some of the craziness that's going on in around the world with the changing of distribution and the lack of continuity and sort of good backup service that you get with having a distributor that's loves the product and has done it for a long time and knows it inside and out. That's now seemed to be not valued as highly as perhaps it once was.
I think, unfortunate things about this industry is it has become a commodity industry in recent times. You know, there's a lot of that passion for product and passion for what it can do seems to be disappearing a little bit. And it becomes, a box-ticking exercise rather than a love for what we're doing. And I think that's a little bit unfortunate.
It is. I guess it's change, of which, you've probably seen a bit. There's different kinds of change. I mean, there's the change of what the customer's expectations are or who they are or what they're wanting and perhaps how comfortable they are spending a lot of money or a little. how loud they want to play the system. Yeah. I mean, would you concur that people don't play their stereos as loud as they used to? Because you don't seem to get melted voice coils or blown up output stages like the 80s and 90s where everyone seemed to, maybe I just lived in a bogan suburb, but it just seems like everyone used to flog their hi-fi. Yeah. Everyone's toned it down or is that?
I think it's a lifestyle change to some extent. I mean, there's no doubt that this industry is still buoyed by the boomers. You know, it's unfortunately we haven't really sort of got our teeth into the younger generations yet. And so just, the boomers are older, we're not playing our music like we used to.
I think maybe, you might have it there,
Maybe there are just more apartments.
A lot of people are now moving into more densely populated environments where they can't play their music loud anymore, which is the second part of that.
There also seems to be a trend in design to minimise the footprint of hi-fi. Kind of been a big push to scale down the physical size of this stuff, which inherently, moving, the physics is, the size does matter to a degree, but there's, you think of the brands that shot off like Bose and their approach to the speaker size. And then, that's got to say something. And I guess that fits in with the lifestyle, like Glenn says, of where people.
Well, I guess engineering probably also fits in with amps not blowing up so readily, and I guess there's more better protection circuitry and what have you, and maybe speakers have more power handling. But I mean, I feel like the rite of passage of your new hi-fi system is at what, how many times you can get the police to come past and ask you to turn it down. Once again, I lived in the wrong town, because that definitely was a thing. And in fact, even for many years, I sold hi-fi on the Sunshine Coast, and a guy who mostly sold it into Brisbane, but there was a guy who lived nearby, sort of surf shack, not too far from the beach, bought quite a nice stereo, and he rushed in the next morning. Oh, that stereo, it's amazing. It's everything I thought it would be. The cops were there by 10:30. He was very proud. And I think, I sometimes wonder whether he's got a neighbour about three doors down or something he doesn't much like. When I say he, I mean any number of customers. I believe we're going off at a tangent. Other changes, though. I mean, clearly the gears changed, the sources have changed, and then they've come back again. So you, of course, in 78, 80s, were playing records. We all were. Yeah. No other thing existed other than obviously making copies on tape of various kinds. Yeah. Did you see records coming back, Len? because it's a bit of a shock. I mean, it's not that's old news now, but it wasn't old news in, say, 2007, 2008, where there was whispers of LPs resurfacing.
We have actually never stopped selling vinyl.
Okay.
Turntables. We have always carried turntables. Admittedly, we're carrying more now than we were, you know, 25 years ago. But it's all we've always enjoyed the sound of vinyl.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, it's got its downsides, absolutely. Mm. But it also has an upside in terms of sound. And so we've always promoted that.
Yep.
And in many ways, this is actually playing into our favour now. Because we've had a history in this area.
Yeah, that's right. You're not a well. You have the knowledge clearly.
Yeah.
Because that's an interesting thing I notice is that there's that big gap where the people who've been turned on to vinyl actually don't know too much about it, but the people who, of course, that was their only format that they started off in hi-fi know a lot about it.
Yeah.
So and the fact that you never stopped. So were you? I mean, sales dipped to low levels, I guess, around 2000 or something.
Yeah,
and then you noticed it. When did you, and this is just a bit of trivia, but when did you feel like it started creeping back? Interest, you know, was renewed. Do you think
it would have been probably 10 years ago?
Recently?
Yeah,
that
was, okay. Oh, wow. Right. Really. But I must admit it has stayed on at that level. And I've often thought, well, it's going to become a fad and it'll die away, but it hasn't happened, which is great. Mm. In fact, it's probably getting stronger.
Yeah, I feel like it's stronger. Yeah. I think it probably varies, but mostly.
Would you say that that the younger folk, as we like to call them, Andrew?
Oh, Brad.
Yeah. we were much younger folk. But my son suddenly got switched on, not from my prompting, he wanted a turntable.
Yeah.
And then it became the quest, like a few of his mates, to go out and hunt for LPs, secondhand shops, and he'd already plundered my LP collection anyway, so that gave him the stimulus. Oh, okay. So I'm using my son as an example. You know, he's 25 now, but the thing is, he started doing that at 21. You getting any younger people coming in? Is that fueling some interest from the youngsters?
I think vinyl is, in fact, we were talking earlier about we're not really getting our teeth into the younger generation yet with what we do. But I think this is where we can do it because, there are so many young kids now, when I say young, in the, you know,
20s, 30s.
Are bringing their father's turntable in, which has been in the garage for the last 30 years. Mm. And we're doing them up. You come in here on a Saturday and there'll be two or three turntables lined up on the counter.
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
Working on them. And a lot of these things, and they're then digging their parents' vinyl out and things like that.
Yeah.
And this, to me, is really the start of a new interest for these guys. You know, they're interested in the vinyl. They can then get interested in the music. They suddenly realise that this was designed to play in a certain way and to sound a certain way, not, you know, off an iPhone and a pair of earbuds.
No.
You know?
So it's a combination of what I call slow degustation, where you're actually listening to one side of music.
Mm.
You listen to the whole lot, which has been chosen sort of in a certain sequence, obviously a certain sequence. And two, it's, I suppose, a way of... They're going out and doing that sort of archaeological dig, looking for LPs after discovering their parents' music. And then they start exchanging it. And this is a possibly, we were talking a week or two ago, weren't we, about how we've got to try and get the younger people into it.
Mm.
And this is potentially a way of doing it, just getting people to come and taste it at the shop.
When you say you have to get young people into it, it's not really necessarily about business either. It's just, you just want to show off great hi-fi and just, you know, get that, for me anyway, get that feedback from people where they're clearly enjoying and amazed at what they're hearing, which it's hard to be amazed, you know, sometimes listening to some of the things they listen to music on. I'm not a headphone fan, so I'm the wrong guy to ask, even though I do like Stax and was introduced to them so long ago, and still, and I heard some the other day, and I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that's a, if you're going to have some headphones, this is not an ad for Stacks, by the way, not unless I can talk them into an advertising. I think it's sure, there's an aspect of business about keeping an industry going with you know, new interest from new customers, but it's as much, and this is the thing that's great about this industry, is it's as much about just the love of introducing music and great sound to people, new people.
So it just occurred to me, and
sure,
cut this out if you don't like it.
I hate editing, I won't be cutting it out.
Okay. So back in the 70s and 80s, you remember the not the 9 o'clock news Rowan Atkinson skit where Mel Smith came into the shop, and brilliant, sure, watched it many times. And the power that a hi-fi shop had then, because it was it not, Len? Correct me, you're a little bit older than me. Was it not the
bloody
leading...
Hell, couldn't be, could he?
Oh, he is. Right.
There are people older than you.
Yeah, funnily enough. Well, that was the lead, what was the leading technology? There weren't computers. A hi-fi was something where you did really need to have someone who knew their stuff. Setting up a turntable, getting the compliance right for the cartridge and the matching the arm mass and all that sort of stuff, and a whole lot of stuff. So was it not the leading technology in terms of and having to have someone who knew their stuff?
I mean, when we opened, right, our hi-fi systems consisted of a turntable, a cassette deck, possibly an amplifier and a pair of speakers.
Mm.
And that's basically all you had. And, you know, the amplifier had an AB speaker switch on it, so you could stick a pair of speakers out in the backyard if you wanted to. But that's as far as it went, because there was nothing else to do it. But keep in mind, we had AM radio. We had black and white television set with four channels. Yeah. There was no computers, no mobile phones, you know, no computer games, none of this. So we were the domestic technology for entertainment.
Yeah, indeed.
That's all you had. Either that, or you sat around a piano. And,
I was going to say, there was this, in the mid-70s, there was a thing with electronic organs.
Yeah.
Everyone had an organ there for a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
My second organ in some cases, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So, I agree with Len. I mean, it was. I think that's how I was drawn into hi-fi in the late 70s, was that it was, you know, cool. Like, there was lights and VU meters and switches and stuff. And I mean, you know,
go back to that time, but now with turntables coming back into vogue and
younger
people coming in going, you know what,
It's stepping back from technology.
Stepping back, and they want to learn more about it.
Records is a step towards something tangible.
Yeah.
And I think there's a magic, in the same way as there's a magic with digital recording devices like this, that there's no moving parts and yet it records great sound, talking about the piece of equipment recording this podcast on. It's the alternative. It's like, what? So there's a way, it's this literally black magic, this black vinyl thing can make music that sounds that good, but we're going on and on about records. It's the step in the opposite direction, I think, for a certain age group. Speaking of change, also, I've got a question here, which is a legitimate one, but one that's tricky to answer, and that is that has equipment really, does it really sound better than it ever did, do you think? It is tricky to answer.
I would have to say depends on the component.
Mm.
In terms of amplification, to be honest, I don't think we've had that much of a growth.
Mm.
In fact, in some cases, I think we've gone backwards. You know, if you go back to an old, you know, the heavy-duty Sansuis of the 70s and things like that, but they still today sound...
They make a fun sound.
Fantastic. Yeah. They're very, very good. If you go back to a loudspeaker from the 70s, yes, we've come a long way in that direction because, you know, your imagery, your dynamics, you know, your speed or response, all of those things are almost so much better now. You know, we sort of say to people, you know, if you've got a very old speaker and that becomes your frame of reference because you've listened to it for 40, 50 years, you know, stick it in the garage for a while because, you know, you suddenly hear this new loudspeaker and it's going to be a lot more dynamic and a lot faster. But that's how music sounds. You go to a concert hall, that's exactly what it's going to sound like. So there's been a lot of changes there.
Yeah, speakers have improved, I think. But the other trick with judging, well, playing devil's advocate slightly, is that speakers age poorly, I think. You know, I think they... An amplifier can be repaired and sound almost like new.
Yeah.
A speaker, the materials have gone off.
Hey, not an audiophile. I'll be reporting from the Munich High End Show, which is on very shortly, of course. Putting videos up almost immediately, recording interviews, etc. And the videos will be available at Not an Audiophile Podcast, the YouTube channel. And we're sort of, I guess, as we try to cover some of the... other things that some of the mainstream media that are attending don't necessarily cover. We're looking for, you know, with our educated eye, some interesting products that other people may miss. So, yeah, please check in during the show.
We're back with Len and Tim and Brad, of course, at Len Wallace Audio today on this beautiful Sydney day. I can see the sun shining out there. And discussing all sorts of things. But we were talking, before the batteries went flat, we were talking about... changes, you know, I mean, it's a sort of it's a silly question in a way, because clearly most things do sound better, but does equipment sound better than it did in the 80s? Len, and I did suggest we think about turntables.
I don't think turntables have actually advanced much in reality. Mm. If you look at brands like Lin, okay, I mean, they have improved marginally. Riga, you know, their new models are marginal improvements. There's not been a vast growth in that respect. And I guess when you look at the technology, there's only a certain amount you can do with the technology as well. In fact, it's amazing that it even exists today, because it's a pretty basic technology in reality.
Yeah.
It just happens to work and continues to work.
And one of the downsides of the rebirth of the popularity is that there's now a level of junk out there that wasn't around back then. So you could argue that one thing that's happened to the modern manufacturing of turntables is that they've gone worse through the mass popularity. I mean, because what...
Things like the... Crosleys of the world.
Well, I'm not going to name names. If you're spending less than $100,
I think we can mention Crosley. You
know? The risk is that we
should warn people about Crosley. I think that's a legitimate comment, but yes.
But I mean, when my generation, when I came into the industry at the turn of the century, I was born in the 80s, and so for turntables, for me, all that was left were the good ones, because the market was still only marketed, or was only for enthusiasts and specialist hi-fi dealers and people that took it seriously. So there was no mainstream mass-produced stuff, so what I grew up with as a turntable was the cream of the crop. And then back in the 70s and 80s, which I can only assume, were more of the golden days of turntables, where it was taken a lot more seriously than by all manufacturers. Whereas now, there's a big hook for this riding this wave of popularity and trying to churn out as much crap and as I can. And actually also goes for LPs as well. I mean, you look at the quality of some of the LPs, that not only the way that they're being pressed, but the methodology, or the you know, basically taking an MP3, putting it onto vinyl to sell it as vinyl, because vinyl's selling.
Yes.
It strips away everything that makes, you know, so there is a downside to the modern popularity of turntables. So to say, have turntables evolved for the better in terms of quality of sound? I think in the level that we play in, it's remained. They've obviously improved the materials. When you look at the materials that people are using, like look at some of these modern Rigas and the actual physical materials they use to manufacture the sub chassis and the it's phenomenal, high tech stuff.
Yes.
But it's all based on the same philosophy. It's all in the pursuit of isolation and you know. So yes, they've advanced. I don't think sonically so much. They've advanced in their manufacturing techniques and things, but sonically, the biggest change would actually be for the negative. When you factor in the amount of junk out there, and what that tends to be, where I see that can hurt the industry in a sense, is that some people are going out there and they're saying, okay, I'm going to have a crack at this vinyl thing, I'm going to invest, and then they'll go out and spend a few $100 on some LPs, and then they'll go out and spend $50 on a turntable.
No,
and they'll come home and they'll play a record and they'll go, well, you know what, this actually sounds like shit.
No way.
So they don't get into it. So they think they've experienced it.
cover.
Whereas they, unfortunately, they kind of they missed the mark. And it's not their fault.
No. I couldn't agree more. They get to realise that. Yeah. Not all turntables are alike, clearly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And unlike an MP3 player or whatever that is, Grandpa, you know. Well, yeah, I mean, a phone as far as sound quality, but clearly, and I'll say again, Crosley, it's not something you should buy. that is the $50 unit we're referring to, although I think they're somewhat more overpriced than that, like $199 or something. But, I mean, they sound awful in extremis.
Yeah. I mean, we have people coming in with stuff for repair, unfortunately, and you know, or even for a new stylus, and you think to them, you kind of want to say to them in a nice way, you know, the replacement stylus is
is more than this thing is worth.
Maybe just save your money and buy something, you know, spend a bit more, get something that you're really going to enjoy.
It's a great opportunity to wheel them into a room, and even play them an inexpensive Riga through $1,000 amp and $1,000 pair of speakers and blow them away.
So how much? The question you should ask, perhaps, how much did you pay for that LP? Oh, $50 or $60.
How much did you pay for the turntable?
Hey, wouldn't it be good to get something commensurate with the $50 or $60 for the new record? Or what? They're still paying a bit for second hand as well. But fair warning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is good when you do get someone that gives you the time to then show them what is capable, and you watch their minds explode. You know, and that's a great feeling when you see the eyes light up on someone who's never experienced true hi-fi before.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun. So.
Yeah.
Well, we've done records to death. I mean, that is in vogue though. I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it that you go to a hi-fi show, as we're going to do in the next few days. There will be probably lots of turntables being used. I know you've, Tim, used records to do demos in previous hi-fi shows.
Actually, it's all I've used.
Yeah, well, there you go.
To date,
okay.
I've taken the odd CD player to a couple. I've never taken a streamer. I will be this time for the first time.
Wow.
But I've always found turntables are a good way to stay in control of the... the playlist, basically.
Yes. Limited playlist.
I'm
a big fan of streaming.
Yeah, no, me too. I love streaming. I mean, I think streaming is one of the best things to happen to this industry. It's one of those, love it or hate it, it has exposed more people to music than anyone or any technology ever has or probably ever will. You know, it's and that's what it's all about.
Music has never been more affordable.
Yeah, and we do give. I remember, you know, the hi-fi purists amongst us, we were all very, you know, when Apple's iPod came out and that whole MP3 revolution happened, and you know, the quality aside, sure, that's it theoretically was a step back in that sense, but it was a vast leap forward in exposure. You know, it gave everybody music again, which had stopped. You know, that had kind of died off a little bit, and then
from the Sony Walkman
So, and same thing with, you know, we look at other cheaper aspects of our I mean, the other big evolution, I think, in this industry that I've experienced in my time is the multi-room side of it, and how brands like Sonos and things have come about, and which originally, you know, to do multi-room like they offer now was phenomenally difficult. You had to either be at building stage or quite well off to afford the capacity to do it. The end result was really limited. You could share a couple of sources to you know, a few rooms, and you could control it with two or three things like pause, stop, or skip, or that. And then, you know, within almost overnight, you've got however many rooms you want, song you want, controlled however you want to do it, at a price point which is very affordable.
Yes.
Something you could take home and do in an afternoon.
Yes.
So I'm not going to sit here and promote the merits of what some of these brands are in quality of sound. I mean, in all honesty, a lot of the brands I don't think even should have a space in shops like ours. But what it's given the consumer and how it's put music back in their lives is undeniably a good thing.
Oh yeah, you know, it's great.
Yeah, because it's when I grew up, we grew up with, back to what you're talking about, with what Len grew up with in the hi-fi in the hi-fi system at home.
Well, yeah, I'd like to.
Admittedly,
it's my remaining question is I'm a bit keen to know whether it was a revolving door of equipment or you had your favourites at home. But finish your point.
No,
first,
I was just going to say, I remember when the audio access system that we put in our last house was absolutely cutting edge, and you know, it was amazing, and I loved it. It was fantastic. But it was, when you look back on it now, what it cost to do and what it offered as an ability, so limited. And that was not that long ago. In the scheme of things, that was cutting edge.
I guess you're talking, what, late 90s or something?
No, it was actually 2000.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, 2000. Okay.
And, the year 2000, when all the amazing technology stuff was going to happen.
Yeah.
Towards or beyond 2000?
There were, however, some pros to it, though, that I remember, because we, as time went on, we whipped it out and we put in a digital multi-room streaming system. And one of the things that I've learned very quickly is in the, we were quite, to do with hi-fi. We had sound in the bathroom. One of the things was, it was great. You'd get up and in the morning, on your way in to have a shower, whatever, you'd hit a button on the wall and the radio would come on. And that was great. That was all you thought about. And then when we pulled that out and we put in one of these systems where it involved a little bit more input from yourself, you'd be on your way to the bathroom, you'd have to stop and think, what am I going to put on? You'd have to pull out of the table, you'd have to think
about it. Too many choices.
What am I going to wash for you?
I missed the ability of the decision being made for me. And that, funnily enough, carried through the rest of my life. And since then, I've always had an FM tuner in my hi-fi system. And I use it more than anything. And I'm going to plug shamelessly a brand, Magnum Dynalab, which I love dearly. You get up in the morning, go to get ready, just flick a switch and there's music playing. You don't have to think about anything, you don't have to do anything for it. I mean, if you're going to obviously sit down and listen to music, it's great to have that music at your fingertips and select whatever you like, but there are most of the time, in my life at least, I want to have music on when I'm doing everything and anything, be it cooking or cleaning or getting ready in the morning, and just to click on a switch and have music made for me or decided for me is
a thing. So you now have a sort of a category called shower music or
shower music playlist.
Yeah, shower. What do you do when you go into a sauna music and stuff like that? Yeah, steamy.
Tennis court music. Olympic size pool music. What are you trying to say about these two? Where do they live? Len, the home audio system. You open the store, you must have had a stereo at home already, of course, but because you were obviously an enthusiast. But and you'd worked in the trade selling hi-fi at another store. Did you then start doing, as perhaps some of us do, a revolving door of different things, or did you just, you knew what you wanted?
No,
as you matured at an early age, and you were.
I think it's probably best summed up with a phone call from my wife one day, that said, "If I don't have a system in my home that I recognise and I know how to work by the end of the week, I'm taking a company check to your nearest competitor to buy one for myself."
Oh dear. Well, that's
fair cop.
Because it did rotate pretty regularly. Yes. And of course, every time she'd come home, there'd be something new there. She didn't know how it worked and stuff. So it was a bit like that.
So this was after, 26 years she made that phone call, or was it after a year?
No, it was after only a few years.
Only a few years.
Classic.
Do you have any particularly fond memories of some particular piece of gear, or an amp, or a speaker, or a turntable?
There's a few things which were never in vogue. Which there are some brands that have come along and gone very quickly, which performance-wise were superb. Now, two of them stick in the mind. One was a brand called Sanyo Plus, which was Sanyo, and they produced this high-end brand of hi-fi, which never went anywhere.
I think I missed that.
It sounded phenomenal.
Well, they had the technology.
Yeah, it was very, very good. And the other one was a thing called Toshiba Oryx.
Oh, yes. Now, that I do know.
That
was pretty serious, too.
That was a fantastic.
Toshiba made a very good, that brand, a very good tape deck.
Yeah, it was really and at the time, we were a Nakamichi and an Iowa dealer. We were carrying some pretty...
And Iowa made break gear as well.
Yeah.
Cassette decks, yeah.
But this particular Toshiba was fantastic. There's been a few of those things come along which I've taken home and I've used, which have actually been very, very good, but not in vogue. So.
No, it didn't quite... It's funny, really, everything's changed, but nothing's changed in a way, because those brands, through great technical might... Perhaps not enough marketing dollars, but they certainly would have been a great product. But they didn't make it.
Yeah.
And neither did Agai or, you know, or Sansui, as you mentioned, yeah. and a bunch of others. And yet Marantz and Technics to some degree, and Yamaha, of course, you know, not just linger on, they're going ahead, well, some would assume in leaps and bounds. Yeah. Maybe they are. I mean, certainly, you know, Yamaha remains perhaps as the is the most old school Japanese maker in a way, in the sense that it's a serious business and they support it.
It is still owned by Yamaha, which is another thing too.
They're here in Australia and no doubt in other areas around the world themselves doing it properly, if I say so. That's whereas Pioneer is always a bit of a sad story because they were a big deal all through the 90s and then kind of, I don't know what's going on there now, you know. So.
A little bit of arrogance with some of these brands over the years as well. You know,
well, there was a certain amount of arrogance at Pioneer, as I remember it, yes, when you were dealing with them. But nonetheless, it's a great product in
still at times. Pioneer, how is it? Pioneer still exists, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, no one knows because you can't even ring the number and get any sense from anyone. So I went through this exercise with spare parts recently. So, but we're not here to pick on particular brands. It's just an observation. It's their reality. They're the ones who need to fix it. So you, was there a particular, I mean, you know, is there something you like, you hold dear? Maybe you still have one at home, like, I don't know, a Nakamichi tape deck or a something or other open reel or a so-and-so preamplifier or...
I'd have to say no because it
correct
does,
answer.
Because it does change.
It still changes, even though there was that threat that time. So what is it, a personal question to ask other than the installed multi-room system? What do you use at home? Is that a secret?
Oh, that's it's very personal.
It's very personal.
You don't have to answer.
No. I mean currently, my system at the moment is an NAD Master Series electronics with Bowers & Wilkins 800 series speakers and Oppo driving
display.
And that's it.
That's it. And so would you mostly listen to streams like Tidal or something, or are you listening to CDs?
Mostly streaming. Mostly streaming. But having said that, I am finding now I am starting to go back to CD again.
Okay.
Yep.
And what are your thoughts on that, reasonings for that?
The main is a little bit like what Tim was just saying, is that, you know, sometimes I've got to put on some music and I think, what am I going to listen to? I can't think of anything. Or you go back to the same things you've been listening to for a while.
Yeah.
Whereas my CD collection, I've got a vast CD collection. And I go through and I think, oh my God, you know, I hadn't forgotten about this, or I hadn't played that for a long time, or I don't even recognise this. You know, I must have bought it for a reason. So I'm pulling out stuff again that I haven't played for so long.
Yeah, okay.
And rediscovering it again.
Well, the reality is a lot of those, I know from my own boxes full of CDs, that when you flick through them, you realise that that isn't even on a streaming service.
In a lot of cases, a lot of cases. I mean, I do enjoy the whole rabbit hole thing of streaming where, you know, I listen to a lot of jazz and, you know, I might listen to a particular artist and suddenly I'll think, well, you know, who's the bassist? And then you go into that and who else did he play with? And you end up with people you've never heard of. Yeah. And some of that is...
It is great for that.
Fantastic music.
In fact, like just the way you're saying that you follow an artist or a producer or something and you discover a whole new set of musicians on almost another dimension on another side you never heard about. Because, of course, you can't know about all music. There's far too much of it going on. And that really leads us to, I mean, I suppose slowly wrapping up this episode, unfortunately, but where do you see, I'll ask you both the question, and maybe even you, Brad, to a lesser degree, and try not to disappear back down the 80s rabbit hole. But in this case, it's really about Len and Tim, and you're supposed to ask the question. But where do you think things are going? I mean, I think as in the room, we feel records are strong and probably going ahead, but I mean, there is talk of cassettes and CDs coming back. We don't really, not so much want to talk about formats, but are we going to bigger speakers, smaller speakers? Is everything going to be sold online and hi-fi retailers are going to disappear, or what? Just your thoughts on the future.
I'll go first.
Yeah, sure.
On this one. I think that the market is extremely fertile insofar that there is this couple of generations of people coming through that have grown up with all the music in the world at their fingertips. You know, anything they want.
Yeah.
They just haven't experienced it the way that it was intended to be experienced by the artists at this stage.
Yes.
But there is a very, very fertile ground there that will grow this market. And look, you know, once these people, you know, they get through their having their kids and their schooling and all this sort of stuff, they'll come back to the music they've loved.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, it'll be the stuff they grew up with.
I guess is that how you feel it works to some degree? You get life gets in the way of listening to music to some degree?
There's no doubt about that. You know, if you're in a home and you've got three screaming kids and, you know, you're worried about the bills and, you know, paying for your food and all this sort of stuff, you know, you don't have that time and energy to sit down and really enjoy the music, which is unfortunate, but it's the way it is. That's the first thing. I think the other thing is, when we talked a little bit about, you know, brands like Sonos and what they've brought to the multi-room industry. Now, there's tremendous potential there. There are some compromises on performance with those products.
Yep.
But that is starting to grow. And you've got people like Name Audio now looking at this and thinking, you know, we're going to get into this market. And so there's no reason why multi-room audio can't also or won't become, you know, very, very much improved, and people could get to a level where they can enjoy their music. I'm a huge believer that, and this again comes back to what Tim was talking about with turntables, I'm a huge believer that if you're playing music and it doesn't sound good, eventually you lose interest and you don't play music anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if it can involve you, if it can have an emotional impact on you, you will go back to it and you go back to it all the time.
Yeah.
You know? So once we can go to multi-room systems where they do sound good and you can walk into a room and get involved in the music you're listening to, I think that'll grow as well. So I think there are two areas there that we will think. I think it's a very positive answer to your question.
Yeah.
I think it's a very positive future.
Yeah, it feels like it. I'm glad it seems that way. No one knows better than probably you two guys.
Yeah. And I'll ask Tim the same question because he's the later generation.
Well, I mean, one thing I think on the question you asked about where the acquisition of hi-fi is going to come from, whether for a consumer, whether it be an online store or a brick and mortar store, I think we need to be careful as an industry to adapt to the undeniable preference for online shopping by consumers these days. I mean, it's just how people do it now, you know. So that we've got to try and strike a good balance of offering service and the right solution for people. But also keeping the ownership of hi-fi relevant in their lives, you know. So it can't just become something that they'll quickly order online as something that, you know, something they aspire to own and enjoy when they own it. It's a hard thing to do. I mean, I remember when I first got into the wholesale world of this industry, one of the avenues that we used to try and keep a handle on, you know, cowboy pricing and all that sort of stuff is some products weren't able to be added to cart, or, you know, it might have been a way to just help, you know, streamline price wars and things like that, even though that technically it's a fuzzy line in Australia. But, and that was kind of the one thing, you know, you weren't allowed to have this as an online sale. But then when COVID came around and people were only shopping online, your product was no longer visible at all, or there's no way at all. And coming out of COVID, we found that the shift back to brick and mortar store wasn't potentially as rapid as we thought.
Yes.
So I think the future of consuming hi-fi is undeniably still going to be a focus for online. As much as our business model, you know, doesn't like the idea of that, as long as things like vinyl that can keep that tangible ownership and that you know what I'm trying to say, when you have more of a, it becomes more of a hobby in terms of the actual event of using your system, owning your system, that engages people to have more, you know, it entices people to have more engagement with a dealership.
Yeah, come into the store.
Come into the store.
Yeah.
Well, it seems such a waste.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter how good any website is, and there's some good websites, that have lots of products on there. A lot of them they probably don't even have in their store.
This is true.
But you you know, your store is, I mean, you know, I've seen hi-fi stores around the world. It's still one of the best hi-fi stores in the world, in my opinion, because there's a huge range of all kinds of different products, beautifully presented, in nice quiet spaces that are acoustically quite, you know, neutral. A lot of thought's gone into the display of the product, and it just seems like such a bizarre waste of an opportunity to not just see it, perhaps negotiate a sharp price, but it's not about price. But the point is, you know, if the thing with online, a lot of people think, I believe it is less expensive to buy online, and it's clearly not. I mean, I know there's actually a whole subject about that, and really, why is it any cheaper? I mean, sure, this is more expensive real estate than a warehouse out at Alexandria or somewhere, where, you know, clearly it is cheaper to keep stock on a bit of Dexy and racking and just sell it over the internet. But the difference isn't that much.
Mm.
The experience that you get at a great store like this store is gold. I mean, it's literally the difference between some teenager looking at YouTube videos of Ferraris and McLarens versus going either to the racetrack to see them circulate or going into the showroom and just, you know, I mean, you can't compare the two things, the noise, the appearance in the flesh versus or looking at it online. But I mean, but I believe what you say is absolutely true, that the people are living more in their screens.
It's just the way that
and so that, the that, that, yeah. that they may don't, maybe they don't even want a physical interaction.
And it's a shame, because when you think about it, if you're coming into a store, and if the people are like Len and Tim and the rest of the crew,
what here, nice.
Well, just engage.
Not like your Knock the 9 o'clock News sketch.
Yeah, no, not that's the antithesis. What it's about is that actually there is, it's curiosity and learning, that's what I'm trying to, and the excitement of actually going, oh, shit, I didn't know that. And it's, in other words, you're coming in, it's not, what can I flog? You could buy a system online, have no idea what it sounds like. You've gone on a YouTube review or a online magazine review, but there's been no actual process of that joy of going, oh, I didn't know that could sound. Understanding there might be an effing difference.
Yeah.
And that's how do you tap into people that you know what? Come on in. Coffee, yeah, cheese, yeah.
Well,
make it an experience.
Yeah. The experience difference is really the one between listening to hi-fi or going to a live concert. I mean, ultimately, as you were saying, Len, the concert can't replace, the hi-fi system can't replace the concert. They're both great things. So if a concert's at position number one and a hi-fi system is at two, well, clearly buying hi-fi online is number three or lower. It's much more exciting to come into a store. And I don't want this to podcast sound like a huge, you know, if trying to flog bricks and mortar over online, everything, they both have a place. But it does seem, when I wander around this store, it's, you know, maybe it's just me, but it's good to see the stuff in the flesh.
I think the crux of this, though, is that, as I say, you can research it to death, a product online. Yeah. But you've got to remember that there is no standard marking system for anything we do.
No.
It is an oral experience. Yeah. It is an experience where you are reacting to the music that you're listening to. And whoever is doing the online review, whether it's YouTube or written review or whatever it is using his ears.
Indeed.
Right, or that person's ears. And that does not mean that your ears are going to be the same as the review that you're reading.
Or your history, your background, your culture, what have you grew up listening to. So I mean, it's an emotion. It's an emote to it.
So many times people come in and say, look, I've read all these fantastic reviews about a particular product, and we can set it up and play it, and we'll say, after asking a few questions, say, oh, by the way, you should also listen to this. And they say, oh, yeah, I much prefer that.
Mm.
And now that's not being critical of the original product. It's just that product for does them. Not suit Send it that to person. And unless you're physically listening to it, to me, it's the same as buying art online. I could never, I mean, if I look at a photograph of a piece of art, and I look at the piece of art itself, they're very different things. You know, so I would never buy a piece of art online for that reason.
Exactly.
But the same thing, you've got to hear it, you've got to react to it, and you can't do that without physically being there and doing it. And I'm not saying they have to come to here or wherever, but do go to somebody who can demonstrate those differences.
If you flip to two or three different shops,
yeah,
at least you'll get, you're getting a sense or feel of what, oh, okay, I'm starting to find that really engaging or whatever.
Do you know the crazy thing is? You won't remember the sound. You'll remember the emotional reaction.
The feeling.
Yeah. It's the reaction that you'll remember, not the sound. And that's the important part.
And I think also important, I mean, that is important as far as the experience, but the other important thing I feel that maybe some people don't want to go into a store is the potential obligation that they may feel to do business. And in reality, that's like to tell it, we've all four of us in this room have sold a fair bit of hi-fi. There is no obligation. There absolutely isn't. And I'm directing this comment to a potential customer who may be listening to this rather feeble podcast. Oh, excellent, sorry. Amazing. Best guest ever.
Great
podcast.
Guest, yeah.
Is that there is no obligation. When someone new walks in the door, we don't go, great. It's not like some used car salesman in a car yard full of old Geminis or something. That are rusting away faster than you can sell them.
Anyway,
no one knows what a Gemini is. The point is, we just want to impress you. And if we do that, you might buy something. At least that's the way I always saw it. Maybe that's why I never made any money. But the point is, it's about a bit of fun and finding out what people want. And you know, you shouldn't, as a potential customer in any, I think in the vast majority of specialist hi-fi stores, think that you will be obligated at all, or the front door will be locked as you come in and you will not leave until you pull out your credit card. That's simply not the case.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think...
there's one other value add is that when things go awry, you know, you don't call Ghostbusters, you call Len Wallace Audio or another specialist.
It's not an ad, Brad.
No, I don't know, it's other specialist stores. So you basically go, shit, something's broken down. I'll take it back to Len if you purchased it from Len Wallace Audio. And you've got backup there in terms of if it's not sounding right at home, you've got I'm not trying to, I'm advocating because...
No, you're like, right. You're right. That's a very important point that... If things go wrong, any good bricks and mortar store, but I believe certainly in this store where you've got questions, you've got a problem, you don't have to. I mean, I hear it all the time. Oh, I don't want to. I bought it online. I don't want to deal with them. You know, they're in Melbourne or something, and you know, and I'm at the opposite end of the country or whatever. This is the joy of the local store, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
home ground advantage.
Absolutely. Well, it's home ground service. So you can resolve it quickly there and then.
Just so we're not trying to just advocate Len Wallace Audio, which of course we love, but other specialist stores that have been around for a while, and that's why it's worthwhile.
I think specialist stores that survive all give great service, otherwise they wouldn't survive.
There's a lot of guys out there that do a good job.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Hey, thank you both, Len and Tim Wallace, from Len Wallace Audio. Been around since 1978. Still going strong, better than ever. And Brad Sirhan, master loudspeaker designer, and myself, Andrew Hutchison. I failed to mention my name at any point.
Delacorde loudspeakers.
Yeah, there's that.
Other great things. Yeah,
when I'm not podcasting.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time very much, as I'm sure the listeners do. And at that point, we'll wrap it up. Thanks, and we'll see everyone in the next episode.
Thank you very much.
If you've enjoyed the show, and you must have because you made it this far, can you please perhaps give us a 5-star review, if that's what they call it, on the platform that you prefer?